This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Follow the money.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Here we go. Welcome in. Follow the Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Happy Labor Day to everybody out there. Hope you're having a great, safe, and successful weekend. Pauly Howard is back. We're live in Vegas. Circa Resort and Casino is the spot. Tons on college football, obviously. A lot to react to, a game to get to tonight, week two numbers, game of the year numbers, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I don't want to overreact, but
yeah.
Nick Whalen on the program, Brett McMurphy on the show today. Win, lose in 45 minutes. How the hell are you?
All right, buddy.
Good?
Yeah. Should have put me on Friday. I look like a chipmunk. Would have been funny.
Was it bad?
I know.
Was Friday with the wisdom teeth yank, was Friday okay. Worse than Thursday?
Yeah, because then...
The pain started to sit in?
Stuff wears off, and yeah.
How out of it were you on Thursday?
It wasn't that bad.
Oh, you weren't? Okay.
No, I didn't think, no.
The drool, though, was that a thing?
Did that control your drool? Yeah.
Were you on a liquid diet for 48 hours?
A lot of ice cream, thanks to Massaro.
Okay.
Reaching out. A lot of ice cream, little mashed potatoes. That's about it.
Okay.
Do that, yeah.
Well, it's good to see you, buddy.
Good to be back. Yeah, we made it, buddy. This is good.
We made it. Feels good.
Football's here. This is excellent. Good games last night. Good weekend. Michigan debacle. We're back with a bang already.
We have a lot on that coming up in about 15 minutes, obviously. Zero upsets in the top 25, Pauly.
Not surprised. We didn't have a lot of marquee games.
No, we did not. But here's the thing. At least one top 25 team lost to an unranked foe in every week one since 2020. That's it. That was my biggest takeaway is that, yes, we had some decent games, but for the most part, I mean, I think that's the state that we're in, right, of college football, is that if you're a little guy and you have a pulse whatsoever, well, the players that are responsible for that pulse, bam, they're gone. I mean, you can't sustain that at all. You're not going to have enough money to keep up with the big boys. And then all of these other teams above you, where the gap was already, that big, now these are turning into Grand Canyon games. I think that's what I'm going to refer to them as.
Well,
most of those little guys had no chance over the weekend.
Boise looked apart, though. That was impressive.
Yeah, but I don't call... They're not a little guy.
Well...
I get your point, though.
But that's still impressive to have the lead late as a 24-point underdog on the road against what some people think is a top-two team. So that was a nice job.
Two things can be true about that game.
Mm-hmm.
One, I did not have Oregon on my list of teams that can win the national title. I don't believe in them. I have too many times, and I've gotten burned. I just don't think that Dan Lanning is the guy to get it done. I don't care how talented they are. I don't think they're going to be able to compete with the actual bigger boys when they have to go, and it has not gone well in the playoffs as well. On the flip side, Boise might be really freaking good again this year.
Mm-hmm.
And that game coming up this weekend, Boise and Memphis, is gigantic.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That has everything written all over it.
Well, the fun part about out of the gate so soon now is do you overreact to one game? Do you panic? Or do you say, now I'm going to get a better performance out of the team in game two?
It's a phenomenal question.
Because how do you not take Oklahoma against Michigan, where Underwood can't even complete a pass, and he's on a short leash? What do you do with Rutgers, who plays Friday against Boston College? Just a horrific loss to be laying 30 points, and you get blown out by UMass, right?
That game started live on the air last Thursday when you were out. Femi and I were on the air saying, dude, this is not a fluke whatsoever.
Yeah, right. That is a 17-point lead.
Yep.
No doubt about it. And then... watching what happened last night, how's that going to go for Ole Miss in 2 weeks when you play LSU?
You know that look-ahead numbers? I don't know. I looked at every single national book I could get my hands on today. I looked at that for that game in 2 weeks. I did not see it anywhere. Maybe they'll repost again tomorrow. You know Ole Miss, before last night's game, they were 2.5 in that game?
I believe it,
I can't imagine they're not going to be favored against LSU, are they?
Yep.
Both teams are going to win in blowout fashion this weekend to get ready for that game. I mean, Chambliss is great. He had an amazing second half last night. They can't be favored against LSU in 2 weeks.
No. I mean, that's even though Clemson might be lousy and the game is past Dabo by, that's still alarming what happened. I mean, late in the third quarter, they had 6 touchdowns. Clemson had 3 first downs.
Yeah.
The yards are 570 at one point. I mean, that's catastrophic. Can't look like that. You know, Kiffin was hilarious afterwards. I thought it'd be like 35-10. Something like that. 51-3 late in the game and everyone left.
I mean,
how does that happen? It's,
and we have buddies who live in that area. They have season tickets to Clemson football. I think it's safe to say that the window is gone.
Yes.
And that, like, right, you have to look back at those years that you had for, I don't know, what was it, a good decade stretch when you were winning titles. You had all that talent back-to-back with Watson and Lawrence kicking Alabama's ass. That's never going to happen again. Just you had to enjoy it while it happened. This guy's never, ever going to get that program back to even remotely close to what they were. Yeah. And they are an afterthought in the ACC, which, by the way, that conference, mainly their fault, that conference was a disaster this weekend. And now we got the game going on tonight.
Did you see the move on Miami? They're now minus 550 to make the playoff.
Well, what should they be to win that conference?
Man, I know. It was Stanford, and they had injuries, but that wasn't so I think we answered the question, is Mensa better than Beck, at least for one game? But Sky's, like Tony said after the game, there is no limit. Baby Jesus.
Who would you rather have a bet on right now, Mensa or Tony, to win the Heisman?
I would think the quarterback gets the credit.
All right. He was popular here at VSiN.
Mm-hmm.
I know our buddy Dustin Sweetelson was all over him.
Yeah.
And Tony dropped from, during that game, he dropped from 38-1 to he was below 10-1 at several books. I think Circa right now has him the highest number that I've seen, but he kind of ballooned back up to double digits there. After some more games got completed last night, obviously Carr and Chambliss were in action. There's also this from our buddy Scott Seinberg, host here at VSiN. His website is betterday.com. Since 2021, college football top 25 teams that did not cover in week one are 16-29-1 ATS in week two, 13-25-1 ATS when favored. Here's your list this week. Oregon, Indiana, Houston, Missouri, Texas Tech, Tennessee, and Michigan. The Texas Tech game, that was not very impressive from them.
No, and Oregon State looks to be improved. They hung in there this week.
Right.
I think that point spread's crazy.
So do I.
After how bad they performed. Right. Oregon State appears not to be a joke this year.
Mm-hmm.
So, and on the road. That's a lot of points.
Well, here is a perfect example of week two games. Like, how do you react to what you saw? The aforementioned Ducks win. Now, they had more than 500 yards against Boise State, but they were lucky to get that win. They're taking on Oklahoma State this weekend on the road. They're three touchdown.
I can't explain what happened
the
there.
The number keeps going up, and Oklahoma State was never in that game.
I know. Offensive line issues. Morris brought all his guys from North Texas, but they only had two returning linemen. They pressured Mestermaker all day. He had some mistakes and turnovers. There was a goal line stand early. That's incredible. For them not to, that output that they couldn't do anything, and their fans left the game early. And the other thing, we saw a lot of horrible coaching over the weekend. And he's a good coach, but what Boise did before the half was also catastrophic.
I agree.
And how about that sequence? So you get a stop, right? There's a minute 10 left. The clock's running. And he calls a timeout. But Oregon's going to pin you. So instead of taking the clock down to like 40 seconds and you go to halftime with the lead, he calls the timeout. Then they're pinned. They go run, nothing, timeout, Oregon. Incomplete. Punt, Oregon takes over at Boise territory.
That's right.
And it leads to a touchdown.
Of course.
They handed him 7 points.
It was terrible clock management there.
Yes.
That was a really, really bad example of a guy that you think should be pretty buttoned up at this point. Week one, you have all season to get ready for that, and that's how you operate before the half.
Gave him 7.
He kind of choked there at the end of the half.
Could have won the game. That was huge. And I don't know what your guy Fickell's doing either.
Well,
I mean, that's you call a timeout with 30 seconds left, down 41-13. Okay? You're a 3-touchdown underdog. It's 4th-and-7 from midfield. You're down 3 scores. He punts with 7 minutes. And then 4th and 2, third and 5, down 17, driving. They run the ball and settle for the field goal. Why are you running 3rd and 5?
I mean,
it's the same crap with this guy. It doesn't make any sense.
No, they are visibly improved from previous years, but I don't know how much that's actually saying about the program. They are probably, because of the schedule, going to be a bowl team this year, but that's the best thing I can say about them. And I even under that scenario, I can't imagine that this guy can come back and be the coach next year. I will say this. Now, I'm also going to raise my hand. I took a shot in that game. I had Wisconsin first half money line, a little bit on game money line, but much bigger first half on the money line. On that fumble return, or the kickoff return, where the Wisconsin player fumbled it, they had 6 different angles of the replay. 6 different angles. Not one did it look like that was an official recovery by Notre Dame. and you go to replay and you look at it for that long and you say you're not going to overturn it, what are we doing? And this is going to lead us into the Michigan discussion coming up at the end of that game. How do you possibly spend that much time looking at that fumble and say, yeah, you know what? There's not enough evidence here to overturn it. It's Notre Dame ball. I would flip it. If Notre Dame, yes, I'm very bitter again because I'm a Badger fan as well, but I'm just being as realistic as possible here. If Notre Dame was the team in that spot returning the kickoff and they fumbled and Wisconsin was the team that appeared to recover and they had six different angles to show you that, no, it's not a fumble. Do you think Wisconsin would have gotten the benefit? Of course they would not have. If they would have said, yeah, this tells us all we need to see. It's Notre Dame ball. The referees after week one took a wrecking ball to this sport.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, this awful job.
Mm-hmm.
In two of the, both, and Big Ten teams involved in both of them, by the way.
I thought McDonough was excellent last night, too, pointing it out. Why did we stop the game when the guy clearly wasn't even close to going out of bounds?
Right.
On the long touchdown.
Yep.
I know. I'm with you.
Maddening.
It's
God, that made me sick.
Yep. And it's unfortunate. There was some good action, and all the talk is the negativity and what happened with the miracle of Michigan.
Yeah, well,
now,
I mean.
You get that, but that's, hey, people couldn't believe it, right? I mean, how do you come to that conclusion? That's the biggest indictment. McCauley is stunned. He doesn't have words.
No, he's speechless, basically.
Yeah. It's like, how can they put a second back on the clock? It's synced. We're using the clock in the stadium.
Sure.
We have the same clock.
Sure. And the Big Ten admitted that after the game. They actually said that the strobe system is synced before the game starts. Okay, but you have some other magical clock somewhere else that nobody else can see? Good stuff. We'll get into that coming up. And look ahead to their game against Oklahoma this weekend. A lot of people will say this number is an overreaction, but how do we know? This is Follow the Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Good to have you on board today. Thanks for watching, as always, YouTube TV, Sirius XM channel 189, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, or any of our great affiliates. Shout out as well to our buddies, Sean Green, Ryan Kramer. What's up, boys? Sports Gambling Podcast. Had to wear the shirt today. Courtesy of them.
That's excellent.
Yep. Yeah. Refs are terrorists. I knew as soon as that game ended, well, not as soon, because I was so steaming mad over the end of that result in Michigan Saturday night. After I cleared my head after about a half an hour, I realized, you know what? I think I have that shirt. Let me go see if I can find it. I did. I'm like, I'm absolutely wearing this on Monday.
Good job.
I'll tell you a little bit later.
I felt terrible for those kids.
How do you not?
The guys are crying on the field.
Yep.
It's going to be the biggest win of their careers.
Their lives.
Maybe, possibly, yes. Not many guys are going to go on to do anything professionally, right? To be a 28-point underdog and win in the big house, you're celebrating, helmets off. Oh, wait a second. We're going to put a second left. And then the unthinkable happens.
I'm willing to bet that those kids from Appalachian State that beat Michigan, what is that now, 18 years ago,
mm-hmm.
19 years ago, they probably have a reunion and still talk about it every single year.
Yeah.
They probably still talk. Are you serious? Of course they do. That's a lifetime ago. And same thing happened, should have happened the other night. Now, again, full disclosure here. I'm watching that game that has the volume on. I'm pretty hard into the game, pretty hardcore into the game.
When?
Oh,
this is the was the fun part about the game. When did people turn over, take some in play, and realize, my God, this is real, they can do it? And Michigan's in a lot of trouble.
Middle of the second quarter, and then It was 7-6 Michigan, Western's ball, third quarter, and they were driving.
Got it.
And I took 6-1 on Western Michigan.
Because then I'm like, okay, it's still close. They're not pulling away. I saw the Montesano tweet. How do you miss the face mask?
That's, oh my God.
That's another one. So I'm like, this is third quarter now. This is getting interesting. And then you flip it over. It's like, my God, they're going to win this game.
Yep. So not only that, they also missed the running into the punter. Game should have been over with. I mean, several times.
It's another one.
So now, again, I had a nice position on Western Michigan to win that game outright. And then once it came back down and Michigan had the ball, I was able to like come back on both sides here. And I had Michigan, including before the final drive, I had them at 11-1. I would have done better. That was only a hedge to get some of my money back and make a nice little profit. I would have done better and had a really nice night had Western Michigan won. They didn't. We all saw what happened there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll tell you a little bit later on in the show. It's the most mad that I have been at the end of a game for a result in 25 years. So you can probably guess the end of that result if you think about the timeline there. But I just... you can try to justify that all you want, and most level-headed people, including most Michigan fans, realize I had two people on my Twitter timeline basically say they got it right.
Okay.
Right? And so...
Based on what?
According to their letter of the law and the Big Ten clock, they admitted exactly what happened.
Okay.
Even though it was 3 hours after the fact, one Michigan alum did reach out to me and tell me that he's absolutely embarrassed.
Yeah.
He said they should have... It would have been better had they lost the game.
McCauley, the ball clearly doesn't touch a player by the time the clock hits zero. How can they put a second back on the clock?
Baffling, Paul. I don't. How many times did they have to show the replay? And the whole time, and my phone's blowing up. I'm sure everybody's phones were blowing up, right? Just like, what is happening right now? This actually cannot be real life, is it?
Yeah.
Power said, throw the people in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Biggest, most egregious mistake he's ever seen.
Dan Walken was strong on it too. Worst thing that could happen for the Big Ten. This is a scandal.
That's exactly right.
It's going to resonate beyond sports coverage. Yep. Multiple people could lose their jobs.
Pete O'Neill and others on X responding to me. 1972 gold medal game five. That's an unbelievable job recalling that.
Several people sent that in. Yeah. I was surprised. Yep. 72 USA, Russia. Yep. Good job.
And this is from Max Newberry. We need live audio and video in every replay command center because there's no way they make that call with all access. I agree with that. And this is also another thing. Mike Pereira, obviously many years at Fox Sports NFL. This is the quote. Chris Vanini tweeted this out from Pereira. It is my understanding that if there is a discrepancy between the video and replay command center versus the television network video that everybody sees, that replay is to use the TV video. And that is the same protocol in the NFL and the UFL. It's the same. You use the footage that everybody sees if there's a discrepancy. Evidently, college football, it's not clear whether or not they're supposed to do the same or not. And then again, it was like 3 hours later, the Big Ten sends that out. And then there's also that sneaky, like, little camera that they had behind closed doors that evidently is the secret clock that nobody has access to or knows about.
Well, number one, you want to root against Michigan the rest of the season.
100%.
Number two, people don't want to hear this, and he seems like a nice guy, Lance Taylor, the Western Michigan coach, and I know Bill Barnwell pointed it out, and people are like, I can't say that one. You're running shotgun repeatedly, third and one.
Well, I know.
You're running a gadget play on third and two. Michigan's out of timeouts. Third and two, you run wildcat. You fumble and almost turn it over. What are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
That is asinine. And by doing that, guess what? There's no time left to run another Hail Mary anyways because the game's over because you're going to run a normal play.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get a first down, the game's over. You take a knee. Why are you running wildcat on the biggest play of the game, third and two, and you almost screw it up? Why do you insist running shotgun third and one for much of the game?
They weren't the only team. I saw that a bunch over the weekend, too.
Sure.
Liberty was doing that a lot.
And then he calls the timeout before each Hail Mary, and they still give it up.
Yeah.
Which I would say a Hail Mary should never work. But how they allow
it to
happen.
Why don't they blitz the quarterback?
Well. That's right. So that's – and cash out button is your friend. The cash out button's there. You want it? Don't want to chance it. Take the – I mean, I was surprised how many people had Western Michigan money line. Good for you. I saw minus 5,000 when they started that drive to kick the field goal, go up five. Who knows what Michigan was in play? You can't give up the play over the middle, though, either to start the drive. But the other biggest takeaway is Underwood's loss, doesn't have a clue. I can't believe how much money they're paying him. And is he even starting after the Oklahoma game?
Yep.
I mean, he cannot complete a pass to save his life.
All valid points, Paulie. Yeah, and you can't, with sports betting so big now, you can't do this because everybody's going to have their antenna up now and they're going to be convinced the game was rigged. And it's an awful look across the board. Now, in terms of their game this week, here's a question. I have no idea what the answer to this would be. And I think maybe either seasoned odds maker, bookmaker, or a longtime pro bettor would be better at it. But I think it has to be asked.
Right.
So now that Oklahoma's up to, what, 5.5, 6, 6.5 point favorites here, the look-ahead number was basically a pick 'em. I would ask the question, well, sir, everybody that's going to say it's an overreaction, this is not me talking. People are going to say, I'm taking Michigan +7 if it gets there. You can't do this after one game. Well, how do we know that Pick'em was the right number in the offseason? And I get it. People can bet this stuff for months. But maybe the market just, maybe bettors, their numbers are wrong on this. And that number should have been closer to where it is now, or should have been closer to like three than where it was at a Pick'em before Michigan looked so bad the other night. And maybe if the true number originally before Michigan played was like four and a half or five, then this number should be 7.5, 8.
Yeah, I know.
There's a chance here where Oklahoma wins this game, and it's, I mean, I'm obviously Captain Obvious here, that it's just an absolute blowout and Michigan looks terrible yet again.
Yep. It's like the Aaron Rodgers discussion for years in Green Bay when he got hurt. What is he truly worth to the point spread?
Yeah, there you go.
You could say two touchdowns.
In some of those years.
You're right. Michigan might be a below average outfit. I mean, you got thoroughly outplayed by a MAC school. So, and Oklahoma might be the real deal again and smack them around.
Sure.
And this, again, this kid is completely lost at quarterback. It's an adventure. What does Venables know better than anything? Defense. You don't think he's going to make that kid throw the ball? And they'll have spies on him and dare him to throw and complete anything down the field? And last thing on this, I don't care how it played out. You're Michigan. You're a 28-point favorite. You can't storm the field. That's the saddest storming of the field you're ever going to see. You can't do that.
Of course not.
You're playing Western Michigan.
I don't care how you won the game. They're Hail Mary or not, you can't storm against a team like that. I'd like to say be better, but I know that you're not.
Oh.
Terrible job there. You're right. I mean, Oklahoma's defense is the real deal. What if, are we looking back at this game right now, to go over that question again about the overreaction, are we looking at back at this game in November or at the end of the year saying, how is Oklahoma lane 5.5? They should have been 2 touchdowns.
No, media people get it wrong every year, though. With these preseason polls.
Of course.
I mean, this might be a 6-7 loss team. You never know.
Sure.
I mean, it certainly looked like it last week. So this might be easy money and they could blow them out.
Imagine having a win total over bet on either way.
Huh?
Either over on Western Michigan, under on Michigan, and somehow that doesn't win now.
Now, maybe during the course of the game, there's a quarterback change and that kickstarts the offense and gets them going. But if you're going to tell me they're going to win the game with Underwood, not the way he looks. And struggles to throw the ball. NFL Weekly on the Sharps turns each week's NFL slate into a sports prediction tournament. Everyone starts with the same chips, picks from the same slate, and lands on one public leaderboard. You see where you stack up. Enter at jointhesharps.com. Scan the QR code. Use code VSIN50 for a 50% deposit bonus up to $100. Jointhesharps.com. Promo code VSIN50.
NFL is here as well. Week one. You're right, Paul. We made it. We finally made it to the big game.
2 days from kickoff.
Player props, week one, maybe a little survivor. Nick Whalen joins the program to discuss all of it next here on VSiN. Tons of NFL to hit here. Week one upon us. A game already coming up on Wednesday now. Then you get the Australian matchup on Thursday. We head out to the Progressive Guest Line. Nick Whalen joins the program now with RotoWire. Nick, thanks for the time as always. I want to begin with this, with the lid lifter to the season. RotoWire tweeted this out yesterday. Trevion Henderson, ankle, wasn't in uniform for practice Sunday. Appears likely to be listed as a non-participant in the Patriots' first injury report of 2026. I looked at the Stevenson props. In your opinion, are they a little bit too out of control to play him over?
I think given the matchup, guys, it's still a little bit of a scary proposition just because of, you know, the last NFL game we watched. We saw how this went offensively for at least the first 2.5, 3 quarters for the New England Patriots. But yeah, I mean, it certainly appears that Henderson is not going to be an option. And I actually was looking at the over 1.5 receptions for Trevion Henderson coming into this game. I thought that would maybe be the spot where you could play him. So now you have to pivot a little bit if you are looking at some of those running back props, but I don't think it really changes the game plan all that much for New England. You know, obviously Trevion Henderson is more explosive. He's a little bit better creating those explosives as a pass catcher, but you know, when they kind of pushed him aside early in the season, we did see Ramondre Stevenson functioning in that role. I think because he wears number 38 and he's a bigger guy, we just think all he can do is run between the tackles. I don't think this necessarily changes things all that much for New England. And, you know, Ramondre Stevenson, looking at even his receiving props, 24.5 is the receiving yards number. I think that's a little high for me, but something I will look into a little bit more before we get to Wednesday night.
All right, he's going to have a big dose in the offense on Wednesday, no doubt about it. How about two plays from the same game? Jacksonville's going to be very popular on teasers and also Survivor. What do you think of the Jags and what you want to do with the Brownies team total?
Yeah, this is, you know, one of several plays that I like taking an early look at week one. Or I guess not even an early look anymore, guys. We are officially in week one. It is a rare situation for me where I am feeling optimistic about the Jacksonville Jaguars at really any point, even when they were rolling last year. You know, I tend to be a little bit more of a pessimistic fan, but as much as I may have some questions about Jacksonville, specifically some of their losses on defense, I just don't know how you can have faith in the Cleveland Browns right now to go on the road with Deshaun Watson as their starting quarterback. We know the fans don't want it. I don't know if the coaching staff even wants it. I don't know if the players on that team want Deshaun Watson to be out there. We have seen very little evidence, almost no evidence in the last, what, 3 or 4 years now that Deshaun Watson is still anything close to a quality starting quarterback in the NFL. So I know that number is starting to rise a little bit at some shops, but I am comfortable taking the Jags to cover the 7.5. And, you know, one way I think you can kind of pile on and still fade the Cleveland Browns in addition to that spread is just looking at the team total, which you can still get at 16.5 at some books. Again, I just don't see it. You know, I really don't see them doing a whole lot offensively. I think with Jacksonville, you get year two now under this coaching staff, a defense that did make big improvements last season. I really, really don't trust the Cleveland Browns to do anything through the air in this game. And I think much like Jacksonville did week one against Carolina last year, get a lead early and just kind of salt that thing away in the second half.
Good breakdown. Nick Whalen, our guest, wrote a wire. He's on the Progressive guest line right now. I already played, going back to when props were first opening up here in Nevada anyway, I played Stribling over. He's come down a little bit for the Niners. They're probably going to get some positive news here with, I think anyway. And how do you want to attack this with CMC against the Rams?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought up Stribling as well, because, you know, last I checked a few days ago, his receiving prop, I think, was 37.5. And I think that is viable to go over. You know, I think everybody is rightfully scared of what this Rams defense is going to look like with Myles Garrett in the mix and those two new cornerbacks. But I just think this is going to be a spot where San Francisco is likely going to struggle to run the ball. I know the offensive line should be healthier than it was last year, but they had a lot of issues with that throughout last season. So in addition to Stribling, I would look at the over 4.5 receptions for Christian McCaffrey. You could get that -108 over at DraftKings. Again, I don't know if the Niners want their offense to be as CMC reliant as it was last season. For this specific matchup, though, I'm not sure they'll have a choice. You know, you have these veteran receivers banged up. As much as I like Stribling, it's still his first real NFL game. Mm-hmm. And you got Myles Garrett flying off the edge coming at Brock Purdy. I think we're going to see a ton of quick dump offs to Christian McCaffrey. You look at week one last year against Seattle, kind of a similar matchup. He had 9 catches right off the bat in that game. The two matchups against the Rams, he went 8 for 82 and 8 for 66. Again, I don't think that's the long-term plan. I don't think it's viable to look at 400 plus touches for Christian McCaffrey. But in this matchup, I think he's going to be heavily, heavily involved as a receiver.
This is very popular as well. Could be the right side. Tua, it gets the start for Atlanta against the Steelers. How about Pittsburgh at home to beat the Falcons?
Yeah, guys, it's just kind of a same situation with the Cleveland Browns. I mean, I like this Atlanta team a little bit more. I think they're going to be well coached with Stefanski, but it really felt to me, you know, we got the news this morning that Tua is going to be the starter. It felt like the Falcons wanted to wait as long as possible to find an alternative, right? They were the last team in the entire NFL to confirm their starting quarterback less than a week out from the week one game. You know, we had reports like a month ago that, yeah, it would probably be Tua. And then he played so badly, and, you know, both in the preseason and in practice, that they basically had to revoke that title. They were giving Michael Penix every opportunity possible to get back to where he needs to be physically. And I think they were going to be comfortable starting him even without any preseason action and with very limited practice action. He's just not ready. He's going to be inactive to begin week one. This just feels like I guess it's our only option type of situation to begin the season. You're going on the road. You're playing outdoors in Pittsburgh. I have my skepticisms about what Aaron Rodgers could really do at age 42. But, you know, bringing in a veteran experienced coach in Mike McCarthy, I don't really have too many questions as far as the Steelers being able to pick up where they left off, be a very consistent team on both sides of the ball. I thought that defense underachieved last season. I think there's a good chance that unit will be better. And I think you could argue there are better weapons for Aaron Rodgers at this point in his career than he had last season. So not a lot of faith in me right now in this Falcons team, at least to begin the season. We'll see if and when Michael Penix reclaims that job.
I'm curious how popular the Steelers are going to be in Survivor contests. That's what I want to wait and see about.
To me, probably not as popular as they should be.
Okay.
Sure.
So you are a Jacksonville fan, going back to that game for a second. I think that's why you've had so much hesitation in your career, because, you know, they haven't been good that often. So you haven't really fallen for it. But you also live in Wisconsin, where it's nothing but Packers everywhere that you look, anywhere that you want to like listen to, turn on, whatever. That's all it's going to be. Are you anti-Green Bay as a result of that?
Unfortunately, we did have like a one-day Packers reprieve last night for the Badgers to come out and just get destroyed in the second half by Notre Dame. So we're just piling on at this point. But I think we've talked about it on the show a couple times, guys. I just don't like the spot that the Packers are in coming into the year. And I think overall, these first four or five games without Micah Parsons, it's a doable stretch. You know, can you come out of that 2-2? Yes, I think that can happen. But I had one of my friends ask me earlier today, you know, why are the Packers not favored in this game? And I would say, you know, outside of having a quarterback advantage, even if you are a Kyler Murray supporter, I think you'll check that box in favor of Green Bay. Jordan Love is the better option there. Like, where else does Green Bay have a definitive advantage matching up against the Minnesota Vikings? Again, without Micah Parsons, in all likelihood, without Josh Jacobs, I mean, you're going in with an extremely inexperienced running back group. We just learned earlier this afternoon from Matt LaFleur that Green Bay could be down two of its starting offensive linemen. He basically refused to say whether or not they had a chance to play. That's not a great sign. Mm-hmm. That secondary was a huge issue last season. They have great safeties. They have terrible corners. And, you know, even though we like the wide receivers, the pass catchers for the Packers, I don't even know if that's an advantage, right? The other side has Juwan Jennings and Jordan Addison and Justin Jefferson. To me, I would take that over Matthew Golden, Christian Watson, and Jaden Reed. So we'll see. It's a big spot for Kyler Murray. Obviously a big change for Minnesota year over year. But as you guys know, even though I'm not the biggest Kyler Murray fan, I was extremely out on J.J. McCarthy. And I think just having competency at quarterback for Minnesota is going to make a huge difference right off the bat.
Well said. What were you thinking this weekend when your father-in-law called you and asked you to mow the lawn?
Okay. Yeah. You saw the tweet. Look, I mean, this is what you dream of, right? As a son-in-law, it's like, these are the moments you stay ready for. Yeah. I've been mowing my own lawn here in Southeast Wisconsin, just kind of waiting to get that call. And, it's a big spot, you know, ended up mowing it over the weekend. Received minimal feedback. I didn't get any compliments or any criticism, which I think you'll take that, you know, for the first real mow in a big spot like that.
Sure. Did he? I hope he asked you like Saturday morning, hey, I know there's a bunch of games coming up, but can you come over right now and mow my grass?
Well, the deal that we worked out was, hey, there's some things that need to be done around the house. If we can get these things done, then we can go golfing in the afternoon, before everybody else shows up for Labor Day weekend festivities. So there was significant incentive here for me to get up and get that lawn mowed.
Very good. Nick, love the appearance as always, the information, the analysis. Thanks for the time. Best of luck in week one.
Appreciate it, guys. Good luck.
Give Nick a follow on X. He's at Whalen, but it's the number one instead of the letter L. So at WHA1EN, he's with RotoWire. He also likes under in the Jets-Tennessee game at 39.5.
Well, you can't screw it up, though, too. That's one assignment you got to deliver. I mean, you wreck the lawn or something. I mean, something goes sideways and you're in trouble.
Honestly, probably a top five thing that I miss living in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
I love mowing the grass.
Yeah.
It's great. There's nothing. I know Adam Kramer is great at this. A college football guy. Great at ranking like beers and when they taste great. The post lawn mowing beer is like top five, top 10. Sure. It's very good.
Yeah.
Win, lose, up next. You will not believe what happened in the EPL. Paulie details it next here on VSiN. It's some college football here. Friend of the network, America's Insider, Brett McMurphy joins the program now. He's with On3 Sports. Follow him on X at Brett_McMurphy. As always, my friend, thanks for the time today. Were you aware of secret clocks in stadiums across the country?
No, I haven't. I've been doing this a long time. I wasn't aware that they existed. But, yeah, I mean, look, it's a travesty. I think, You know, it's funny, you know, when the Sorsby thing was happening at Texas Tech, basically everybody except people at Texas Tech are like, the kids shouldn't play.
Right.
Well, we found something else to reunite America, and that is that Western Michigan should have the win. Like, it's not a fluke. It's not a whatever. They should have it. And, again, in the simplest terms, when you have a scoreboard clock, I don't care what the referee's clock says, you've got to honor that clock. That's what everybody's going off of, the players, the coaches, everything. You can't say, well, this clock is not right because it's not synced up and all this other nonsense. I saw Mike Pereira talk about this, the rules analyst at Fox. Obviously, Terry at NBC mentioned this Saturday night. Like, you know, the Big Ten has to explain in a second where it went. But Mike made a great point, and this is exactly what I felt. He's obviously, you know, more qualified in that subject. But basically, his understanding is with the NFL, if there's ever a dispute between a replay and a stadium clock issue, the NFL goes with the stadium clock. They don't go with the replay clock. They don't go with the internal clock.
I think we lost him. Okay.
Damn.
Yeah, he was talking about Mike Pereira.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, that seems to be logical, doesn't it? So people don't get duped across the entire world.
When the rules analyst is speechless, and like, I don't know what they're looking at and how they arrived at this decision, that's when you have problems. And from McCauley to be that, guys, Mike, I mean, for him to be that animated and bothered by it, and it's just, that's all you need to know with how McCauley was talking on NBC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Brett, I was saying about also how McCauley's reaction said it all, too, the rules analyst.
Yeah, I mean, when you've got him and Mike Pereira talking about it, it's very simple. And I'm not sure when I got cut off, but Mike basically said in the NFL, if you've got a difference in the replay clock internally and the stadium clock, that you go with the stadium clock. You go with the clock that millions of people see, even if there's a disparity. What the Big Ten did was they went with their super secret clock, and because of that, Michigan got the win.
Yes, yes. Okay, now as far as that, now we're on to next week. Can you make the case after what you watched that Michigan can keep it close against Oklahoma and how bad Underwood looked?
You know, that's got to be the overreaction. And I mean, again, you know, Michigan, I think, was going to be a favorite, and now it's up to 5.5 with Oklahoma. I know this. I got to turn in my AP ballot after the Florida State SMU game, and I dropped Michigan out of my top 25.
Yeah, good move.
Even if they would have won on a Hail Mary legitimately, I still would have dropped them out. You don't go into that game as a 4-touchdown favorite and struggle and have all those issues. There's other teams that are playing so much better.
Sure.
I mean, Paulie, you're absolutely right. You wonder that, you know, sometimes, you know, everybody's zigging one way and you got to be the contrarian and say, okay, nobody wants Michigan this week. I'm going to take Michigan. But man, if you do, hold your nose and hopefully Underwood can figure out what's going on.
The other abomination was what LSU did to Clemson. And you had some great tweets on what happened. But I couldn't believe, I mean, your tweet in the third quarter, Clemson had 3 first downs. LSU had 6 touchdowns. But then before the final drive, the yards were, 580? How can that happen? 51-3 late in the game.
Yeah, there was a lot of funny videos and stuff. You know, there was guys breaking down, and there was literally a play where Clemson's – and the offensive guard and the offensive tackle both, like, ran out to the left guard, left tackle, both shot out to the left. And there was literally a guy lined up in front of them that, you know, they might as well had a bullfighting, you know, flag and just kind of wait a cape and waved it at him because he literally just walked in. We could have made the sack. Yeah, it was bad. I mean, you know, look, Lane's going to be Lane, but he even, you know, he's saying, you know, he thought that, you know, he was surprised Clemson's offense would look that dysfunctional. There was video of him, you know, when Ole Miss gets a turnover, they've got a 7-foot or 8-foot hoop on the sideline where they give the player a ball and he goes up and dunks on it. In the fourth quarter, Kiffin's shooting jumpers from the sideline. I swear to God, you can find it on Twitter. I've never seen anything like this. Man, I hate to see it for Dabo because Clemson wouldn't be Dabo without Dabo. But, you know, this look, and I'm an Oklahoma State guy, this reminds me a lot of what happened at Oklahoma State with Gundy at the end. And the
good
question
answer
is what does Clemson do?
Well, and then based on that result and then watching Ole Miss's defense last night, the look-ahead line when they meet in 2 weeks, Ole Miss was favored. There's no way they're favored once that number reopens, right?
Because I think if you make LSU a favorite, you're going to have everybody coming in on Ole Miss. I'm sure everybody, you know, on the face of the earth will take the over after that game, after, you know, the first week's results. But, you know, should LSU be favored? Probably. They want two-way action. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be either side's going to be more than three, Mitch. That would be my guess.
Okay.
Your level of concern with your pick to win it all after watching Oregon and Boise State?
You know what? After I went back and kind of did a deep dive on the stats, I didn't watch, you know, I was flipping around, so I didn't see every game. I'm not as concerned. I mean, look, you got to win. Like, technically, Michigan can still win the national title. They won the game. I don't care how bad they look. They're not going to. Oregon outgained Boise State by more than 200 yards. Yeah, they only pulled out a 7-point win. So I'm not that concerned about it. I mean, I know everybody's all jacked up with the, you know, overreactions, and it's like, okay, LSU's going to win the national title this, you know, now after 1 week. I'm not concerned, Pauly. I still like Oregon. Again, all you got to do is get in the 12-team playoff. You don't even have to win your conference. Very confident that Oregon will be in there, one of three, possibly four Big Ten teams, and then we'll see what happens. Their offense looked incredible. I mean, you know, Dante Moore, almost 400 yards passing, three receivers, almost 100 yards each. You know, they got some issues defensively, but, you know, they got 14 weeks to figure that out.
Yep. What happens tonight if it's 35-10 SMU?
You're having me on tomorrow asking me if Norvell is going to be fired. Look, I don't think Florida – I mean, this is a two-game stretch for Florida State. They've got Alabama next week or in 2 weeks. If they start 1-2, you know, he's basically going to have to run the table to keep his job. Uh-huh. The question is, when does Florida State decide to pull the plug? We saw last year when Penn State thought they were going to outsmart everybody and, hey, we're going to get rid of James Franklin early, so we're going to get ahead of the game and we're going to line up our next coaching candidate. Wrong. You gave every coach in America a new deal and a raise because everybody locked their guys up because they didn't want them to go to Penn State. So I think Florida State will wait till the end of the year before they do something. But, Pauly, I can't. If they lose to SMU and then if Alabama takes care of business sitting at 1-2 and they still got Miami on the schedule, I mean, you know, I don't see anything less than 9 wins keeping Norvell in Tallahassee.
Yeah. Again, I don't want to overreact. You just mentioned the team there, the other team in the ACC from that state. They looked awesome. It was Stanford. I get it. But based on their schedule and how it could pop this year for Mensa and also Tony, they're around 10-1 to win the national title. You think that's worth a bet?
I do, Mitch, because again, they should get into the playoff. They've got the non-conference schedule. They've got a huge game later on at Notre Dame, the big revenge spot for Notre Dame. They don't have to go undefeated to get in there. You look at their schedule, suddenly that at Clemson game doesn't really have a lot of teeth. And, you know, they host Virginia Tech. Maybe Virginia Tech's a little bit better. I don't know. They beat the tomato can, so that's impossible to tell last week. But, yeah, Mitch, I'd say they would be because I think they would be in a great position, and then they would – at worst, they would host a first-round playoff game. And then, you know, last year they opened on the road, and then they still got to the national title game. And then with a 10-1, I think that's a pretty good number for Miami, again, barring catastrophic injuries. And then once you get deeper in the playoff, ability to head out if you want. But, no, I would be all for that. I mean, Jesus – Mensch is the favorite after one game.
I know.
Crazy.
Yes.
Awesome stuff, Brett. Thanks so much for the time today. Enjoy the game tonight.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Follow him on X @Brett_McMurphy. You can also read him at On3. They do a great job covering college football. On3.com. Up next, our In Pocket plays here on Follow the Money. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.